The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. And today is my first open mic Monday. I'm going to be welcoming callers in a way that I usually don't. We sometimes get callers during our shows, but I think they're so interesting that people are mostly just glued to them, and they're so focused. And the callers that I get on the regular shows often are not on the topic, and I don't want to disrupt my wonderful guests. So I'm going to set aside a day once in a while, we'll see how it works, to have people call in to ask any questions that they have on their mind on any subject at all. The call-in number you can find on the Progressive Radio Network or on my webpage or, in fact, in my wallet, which I'm now going into to get that call number for you. It's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I want to remind all of you that we are doing a great deal to really build up ourselves as an information center. My wife works every single day putting new information on our website. We have two websites separate from Bragan.com. We have two separate from Bragan.com. And one, of course, is empathictherapy.org, which has a lot of information on it. And it focuses on the good stuff that we're trying to do and on our upcoming conference, April 13, 14, and 15 in the coming year. And we also now have toxicpsychiatry.com, which has specific subjects. You can look up neuroleptics or antipsychotics. You can look up ADHD. You can look up stimulant drugs and get some of the latest research on problems in psychiatry, including brain injury from these drugs. I have a guest, Maria from Florida. Not a guest, but a caller from Maria from Florida. Maria, yes. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, you're the first caller. You're our initial caller on Open Monday. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm lucky.
Maria, you had a question about withdrawal from antipsychotic medication?
From antidepressant, basically. I've been, over the past 4 months, I've been on 14 different psychiatric medications. And I went from mild anxiety to almost psychosis until I realized that the medications were actually making me crazy. So I'm now in withdrawal. I've discontinued the medication slowly. And there have been brief periods of time, maybe an hour here and there, where I felt like my old self. And I want to know if these are signs that healing and recovery of my personality are possible. Because I'm really frustrated with this.
Recovery is always possible, but let's actually get some of the more of the details first. So you're on 4 psychiatric drugs. What drugs were you on?
I was on 14, actually.
14. How many at once?
About 3 at the same time, yeah.
And when was the last time you had any medication?
About a week ago. That's when I stopped tapering off from the last antidepressant.
And it was from antidepressants. And during this week, what have you been experiencing?
well, everything that I experienced on the medication, but much worse. Like terror for no reason, OCD type intrusive thoughts, a lot of fear, hypersensitivity to light and noise. It's similar to what I experienced on the medication, but it's so much worse. So I've had...
Usually withdrawal problems are a little different from what you get on the medication, but what you're describing is certainly all possible from the medication. You're having anxiety, and you're kind of hypersensitive to sounds, touch, and everything else?
Exactly, yeah. That's a major issue, yeah.
And how are you sleeping?
I'm sleeping great. I'm lucky.
Oh, that's very, very good news. So if you're sleeping good, that bodes well for your recovery, because anxiety that interferes with sleep, of course, makes it a little harder for us. I'm really, really glad that that's happening. You having any shock-like feelings in your head or electrical feelings in your body?
Oh, no, yeah.
You having some?
Being mild, but...
Good, they're mild. What's the worst of it? Is it the anxiety?
It's kind of extreme terror or fear about little things, like... going into a darker room, or kind of agoraphobia too. Like, I don't want to get out of the house. I'm afraid of people. I've never been like this before.
Now, what was the last antidepressant you were taking? Was it short acting or regular?
It was Imipramine.
Oh, an old one.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any nausea and vomiting coming off of Imipramine?
A little bit of stomach upset, but not really nausea or anything. It's mostly psychological issues.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like you're doing very well for somebody who's just a week off all of her meds. And I'm very glad that you're sleeping well. And I think you're probably going to go ahead and have a full recovery. Mm-hmm. If your symptoms become intolerable, you can talk with your prescriber about taking just a very tiny dose of the Imipramine to help you through some of the bad times. But so far it sounds like you're doing well, and I would certainly hope that you will have a full recovery. I don't see any reason why you won't. Now, keep in mind, anxiety is a kind of know-nothingness that just overwhelms us. I call it emotional stupidity, and I've had it myself, so it's not to malign anybody that gets it. But when you're really anxious, it feels like you're helpless, doesn't it? It feels like there's nothing in the world you can do.
Right. Yeah.
So at that time, you want to start exercising reason. Do something that's going to help you think straight. Remind yourself you're going through withdrawal. Remind yourself you will recover. Remind yourself anxiety won't kill you. Remind yourself that anxiety isn't actually what it seems to be. It is not the end of the world. Remind yourself that you're still able to think straight, and then do something interesting or do something distracting, maybe exercise, read something that's interesting to yourself, make some notes about how you're doing, and make some notes about your future plans. Exercise your mind and deal with the anxiety by imposing reason on it and reminding yourself it won't.
Right. I see what you mean. It's kind of hard to do when part of it is chemical,
and of course,
but I shouldn't be out of
fear. If it gets out of control. Yes. Well, listen, I've lost Maria now, but I've said what I want to say. Let me take a call now from Erica from Florida. Can we have Erica?
It's me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria. Bye-bye now.
Look. Yes. Hello?
Hi. Is this Erica from Florida?
Yes, it is.
All right. You're on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, the Conscience of Psychiatry. What did you want to talk about?
This is unbelievable. Well, actually, I have two issues. One, with the accident, but another one was in 2005 we had a hurricane, and then there was water got into my apartment, and etc., and mold developed. And in 2010 December, I thought I was going to die because I didn't know that I had H. pylori, but I got the test done, and it was Helicobacter pylori. And
so you have an ulcer?
I don't know, because I'm
I'm not your GI guy, but that's the bacteria of ulcers, right?
Yeah.
How's this fitting with the mold? Did you have black mold in your house?
Yes.
Okay, well, you're getting it cleaned up, I hope, because that stuff is toxic.
You
got to get in specialists. Yeah. You got to really clean the black mold out of your house in Florida. My daughter lives down in Florida. I know about black mold. You got to get in the right people to clean it up right.
Right. And
did you want to ask me?
Well.
Or did you just want to say hello, Erica?
I'm not on any kind of a medication or anything, but this issue with the mold and then the H. pylori, of course, is bothering me a lot. And
it's making you anxious. But these are things that you need to talk about. You need to take actions about rather than to worry about. You've got to get that mold taken care of in your house, and you got to check out what's going on with your gastrointestinal system. So listen, I wish you the best, Erica.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck.
Yes,
bye-bye now.
Thank you.
We have Paul from New York City about a history of a false accusation of sexual misconduct. I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to help you, Paul. Are you there?
Well, it's very kind of you to take my call, Doctor. Yeah, it's a repetitive story that began when I was an adolescent. And I've always been blessed with pretty good looks and was a model for a long time. But, the reason that I called you was twofold. One is this seeming phenomenon that I've encountered many times, which has actually led to a diagnosis of bipolar disorder with psychotic affect, paranoia, et cetera, et cetera, which came from Bellevue Hospital here. When I told the story of the various times, most recently in the last 5 years, that I've been faced with this kind of accusation, first in an AA meeting in Florida, which was spurred by my discovery that I won't go into the details. And then similarly in a very well-known Episcopal church here in New York, it seems to me like we're kind of living, kind of drifting back in many of our social manners back toward the middle and even the dark ages where this sort of stuff was pretty common. And, when I proposed to the psychiatrist that diagnosed me that she said, well, why does this keep happening? And I said, well, I don't know. I can't really tell you. All I can tell you is that when they burn witches at the stake, it really doesn't have a lot to do with
the witch. So you feel like you're being falsely accused of sexual misconduct.
I know I've lost my career and a lot of my well-being as a result of it, and not to mention having been faced with prescribed medication of every and just in the most offhand way.
The faintest idea in the world what's going on with your history of accusation, false accusation about sexual misconduct. Obviously, this is a matter for a lawyer and or a local counselor for you to deal with. It's not something that I can deal with.
In the state of New York, in order to prove slander, which I've attempted, in fact, sued the Episcopal Diocese last year, you have to prove that the person not only accused you falsely, but you have to prove that they did it knowingly. And that, of course, is a practical impossibility.
Yeah. But, Paul, how can I, as a psychiatrist, the conscience of psychiatry, help you? I think I'm not sure I can get...
The twofold aspect I wanted to perhaps for you to be able to address is obviously the one in which I've read a considerable amount that you've written about, the prescription of so-called antidepressants for such conditions as the one that I suffer from, which I found to be horrific in its effects in terms of my own history. That is the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which I found to be, and they're everywhere. It seems like majority.
Okay,
of
and did you have another question? And then you can hang up and I'll try to answer it. Yeah.
Do you have any point of view at all on this what seems to me the growing aspect of character assassination as a means to get ahead, casually used within American society? Have you encountered this among your other patients?
Yes. Well, let me comment on both, Paul, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling. Obviously, I'm in no position to discuss the false accusations of sexual misconduct, but I would say that there is always a possibility of false accusations. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of power in harming people by making false accusations of sexual misconduct. I have no idea, of course, what Paul's story is. And certainly I don't think that whatever he's describing is going to be helped by his taking antidepressant drugs. My latest blog on Huffington Post, which you can get to by going to Huffington Post and checking out Breggin, B-R-E-G-G-I-N, is in fact, and you can also get it through Breggin.com, look up Breggin blog on the left-hand side of the page. But the antidepressants more and more are proving to be ineffective, and long-term, people who stay on them long-term, the vast majority, we now have good data on, it's bad news, good data, that people are getting worse and worse, more and more depression as they stay on the antidepressants, and they can, of course, be a nightmare to come off. I won't get into that right now, perhaps with another caller. So beware of these drugs, and if you go to toxicpsychiatry.com, which is our new information page, toxicpsychiatry.com, you will find information about the long-term negative effects of antidepressants, as well as going to my latest blog on Huffington Post. Brett still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Hi, Brett. Well, listen, how are these phone calls working? Are you able to hear me talking while you're on the phone? This is all new to me.
Yeah, no, I hear you totally fine.
That's wonderful.
But I hear the radio show, and it's on the PRN radio. It's not me on there. On the live thing.
No, that wasn't you. No, you've just come online. Can you turn it down a little bit? Apparently, you're coming in a little strong.
The volume, my volume.
Maybe so. Yeah, and the note says your live stream has a delay.
Is that better?
Well, it's working. Oh, yes, it's fine. My note is it's fine. While I'm talking to you, I'm instant messaging with my engineer. All this is very exciting.
Yes,
so tell
I have
me,
my mom
you, the note
too.
Said something about your wanting to come off Abilify?
Yes, I'm on Abilify, and I've been on it for like about 15 years, different psychiatric drugs, and whenever I get off of it, I tend to, you know, like I have problems. I self-medicate with marijuana. And I ended up sometimes in either a jail or a hospital, and I've tried to get off of it with a naturopath, and it hasn't worked. I'm on Maui now, and I would like to perhaps go to a health retreat of some sort where I could do work trade and pay a little bit and be able to get off of this stuff or see you or do something. I'm originally from New York, but I'm living on Maui now, I should say.
Okay. Well, first of all, it sounds like your life has been turmoil and confusion.
Yes, a lot of turmoil.
And how long have you been on the psychiatric drugs?
I've been on it since after college, about 15 years. I'm 37 now.
Okay. You're on Abilify right now?
She knows you, Linda Wright. She said she saw you at a conference, and she recommends that I see you.
Well, I don't take out-of-town patients. It's just something as a matter of principle I don't do. I try to keep my patients locally because I can help people more in their own network where their family and friends are and where I know the community. But we can chat in general. I can't give you a real medical consult. Is Abilify the only drug you're on right now?
That's all. Abilify 20 milligrams.
Okay. And how long have you just been on Abilify?
How long, ma'am?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. So about 10 years, probably.
Well, Abilify hasn't been around 10 years. So you've been on other drugs?
Yeah,
has Abilify
I was on
been around 10 years now?
Have I lost lithium.
Okay. And you have tried to come off before?
I tried to come off and it hasn't worked. I went to see a naturopath on Big Island and it turned out in turmoil. I ended up in jail and hospital after she tried to balance my brains with vitamins. But it was she didn't want me to see a psychiatrist at the time, so I mean it didn't work out well. And
did
I mean,
you take
I don't
very
know.
If slowly?
It works out, I'll go to Ithaca and visit you. You know.
No, I don't do that, Brett. But tell me, Brett, did you taper slowly?
She tapered me slowly, yeah.
How slowly? How long did it take you to get off of the Abilify?
3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm. And was she giving you good counseling? Were you seeing her weekly for good counseling?
She was doing Reiki and breath work, and she was also giving me vitamins to balance my brain.
Yeah.
Well,
we don't know any. I don't know of any vitamins that are going to balance your brain and help you get off Abilify, honestly. I think that the most important thing you can do is have a good support network. Did you have any friends in Hawaii that could help you and support you?
I don't really have anything but a girlfriend over here, and my family is in New York City.
Yeah.
My parents
well,
are
if you
there.
Ever go back to New York City, I know a psychologist there who's very helpful to people who want to come off medications, even though he doesn't prescribe. He's very helpful in helping you with whoever is prescribing your meds, you know, to figure out how to go about that. And his name is Sartin Weinraub, Weinraub, and he's going to be on my show in a couple of weeks. We pre-recorded it, and Sartin, who is from New York, is going to be on the show. I'm looking it up now, in December, and you can listen to him and see if you like what he has to say, and you'd certainly be welcome, I imagine, to go see him in...
Let me ask you, would it help if I was in a hot farm or something, or a spiritual community of some sort?
Well, I don't know of such a place. I mean, you're going to have to end up Googling, basically, and looking around to see what there is.
I'm looking for a cheap center to get
you.
Off medicine, you know.
Now, Sartin is going to be on December 12th.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday, December 12th, he'll be on, and he's in New York, and he'll be talking about how to help you. But basically what you need, Brad, is you need good, solid counseling, which it doesn't sound like you were getting. You can't rely on vitamins or any other substances. And once you have a good therapy and maybe involve your girlfriend in it, so you've got a couple's help going on, you just attempt a very, very slow taper with hopefully some kind of medical supervision. But that's about what I could say. And there is the resource in New York City. So listen to the show on December 12th, okay? And see if you you think maybe you could get some help.
You said I would help you better with my family in New York. You said I have their support.
Excuse me?
You think I'd be better if I would live at home with my family?
Well, you might if the family works, but that you'd have to evaluate with your therapist. I mean, how it would work out best for you. But you sure do need support, obviously, coming off these drugs because you've been running into really serious problems. I'm not even going to ask you on the air why you ended up in jail. So, but you do need to take care of yourself, come off slowly, be with some sort of support network, and get some decent counseling. So listen, thank you, Brett. Listen to the show on December 12th, okay?
Okay, thank you.
It just isn't easy. It isn't easy coming off psych meds. And it's difficult to give advice, obviously, on the air because it's such a complicated situation. But the most important thing is a good, solid counseling relationship. It can be a social worker or a clinical psychologist. It can be a family counselor. It doesn't have to be a psychiatrist. And if you can get yourself in a good relationship with a counselor, then perhaps you can find a medical doc, maybe your family doc, who can work with you on these issues and see how you can progress. But you got to go slow and you have to take your time. And you can see the problems that Brett is having, coming off by himself in this situation. It's hard to even know what to anticipate when you're coming off a drug like Abilify or Seroquel or Zyprexa or Risperdal. People can get high coming off. More commonly, they can crash and get suicidal coming off. They can get irritable coming off. If you've been on the drugs for a long time, you can get something called tardive psychosis, where when you come off, you actually become disturbed in a way that is different than you've been disturbed before, that's worse or new. You can really run into a lot of difficulties. And I'd be happy to talk to other people who are struggling with this kind of situation if you want to give a call in. So let me go to another topic that's very much on our minds right now, which is the issue of kids and what we're doing to our children. Who's on hold now? Okay. Let me hear from one of our callers on hold. Who've we got? Ann and Dennis. Ann, talk to me.
Hello, Dr. Bregan.
See, I'm still learning the technology here. I lost track on my instant messaging that I had a backup of the callers on the line. So hello, Ann. Where are you?
I'm in Syracuse, and I'm glad to be part of your practice audience while you figure out the technology and how to keep this all rolling right.
Thank you, Ann. So you're just a shout away,
yes,
hour and
indeed.
A quarter away.
Yes.
I'm in Ithaca, and you're in Syracuse. So go ahead.
I'd like to make an observation and then ask a question about bipolar disorder. My observation is that increasingly I am hearing, as people are getting off drugs, that they think getting off psych meds will cure their emotional issues. And that needs to be focused on, that being on drugs is half your problem. The other half is what made you start taking drugs in the first place. And that simply quitting drugs is not going to resolve your problems. That you need, to my mind, strong talk therapy. You got to find a good person who's going to hang in there with you and really listen to you and not try to drug you again. But you can't just walk away from the issues. They're still there, whatever your life circumstances may have been, and you need to address that and be prepared to get off drugs and on to some other kind of therapy, talk therapy preferably. So that's one thing. My question about bipolar.
Let me respond to that, and we'll talk for a minute. Do you want to identify yourself any further to the audience? Are you a professional?
I am Ann Woodland. I took antidepressants every day for 26 years.
Hi, Ann Woodland. I know who you are. Go ahead.
Yes.
But I'm glad you're going to tell the audience.
I stopped taking all drugs 10 years ago, and I am physically damaged from the drugs, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually, I'm fine. Now, here's my question. They diagnosed me with depression. I took drugs for 26 years. In 1999, a psychiatrist told me I'd taken every antidepressant known to man. Also in 1999, they told me I had bipolar depression. Now, I don't understand. Can antidepressants convert a depression into a bipolar depression? And what is your understanding of bipolar? I'm classified as type 2. But what do you think is a brain illness, I think is what I'm asking.
All right. Well, I'm going to address the questions of depression and bipolar and type 2, and I'm going to address the issue of continuing in therapy. And I'll do that when we come back in. Can you hang on for about 2 minutes?
Yes.
Because we're at break time. And then I'll also, we have a caller who cured himself after he came off drugs, Dennis. So, Dennis, you hang on there too. And let's go to break now, my wonderful engineer.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, very much enjoying my first experiment with first Mondays of every month, where I'm going to have an open mic. You know, I get calls from all over the world all the time that I just can't respond to. It's not possible as one person. And this is the opportunity people have to just call me and talk to me about the various issues on their minds. And the number is 888-874-4888. And I'll be doing the same thing in January, the first Monday in January, which will be January 2nd. I'll be back here with taking your calls. And we'll occasionally take calls that are really on subject during the other days as well, but they got to be on subject because I have such marvelous guests and it's so marvelously intense. Now, my friend Ann Woodland is on the phone. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, God, wonderful. Well, you raised two issues. One, I want to address the first issue first. I'm glad you brought up that people really need, when they're coming off drugs, to realize they're going to be stuck with their same old problems or worse because the drugs may have made them worse over the years. And it's very important to be in good, solid counseling. And if you can relate it in any way to your problem, I think that AA provides a marvelous support network as well, and other things that people can do in the community with their churches, with their friends, and with support groups. I think it's very important. I do want to say, however, that I have seen young people in particular who have been on multiple drugs, and when I work with the youngster and their family, once they're off the meds and the family has been educated, we've done some family work, the youngsters can pretty soon begin off and flying on their own. Not always. But, Ann, I'm so glad you brought the point up. It's so critical. Now, about your being diagnosed with depression and then being diagnosed with bipolar 2, which is bipolar with hypomanic, not quite manic episodes, as I recall. Well, the scientific literature and my clinical experience are very clear on this matter. Many, many people switch from either being normal or being depressed to being manic or slightly manic and out of control, hyper, full of energy, not sleeping, having ideas that are pretty way out, and just being over-energized in general. People can in large percentages switch into that condition. And it is not correct to diagnose someone who switches under the influence of an antidepressant to call them bipolar at all. Even the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders of the American Psychiatric Association says again and again that if you're taking an antidepressant and you have a first episode of something that looks like hypomania or mania, it is not bipolar disorder. The proper diagnosis is a substance-induced mood disorder with manic features. That is a substance caused it. And most of the times it's an antidepressant. Sometimes it's a stimulant. It can happen commonly during the direct exposure and more rarely during withdrawal. You can get these episodes. They can be really severe. They can land people in hospitals. One study showed that a very large percentage of people in psychiatric hospitals are there because of psychotic and manic reactions to psychiatric drugs, usually antidepressants. Other studies have shown that in a general population of people taking antidepressants, 5 or 6 or 7% or more will end up being diagnosed with a manic-like episode. And it's not bipolar disorder. It's not by definition that, and it's not in reality that. Now, if perchance you've already had a manic reaction to an antidepressant, or if you've had a tendency to get manic on your own without a drug doing it, then the rate of becoming manic on antidepressants is colossal. It's like one-third or more. The studies are over a pretty good range, but a third is not a bad estimate. So think about that. If you're already having some difficulty in this area and you get an antidepressant, you've got this huge chance. Now, if a substance makes you manic, then it is a chemical imbalance caused by the substance. But what about if you're somebody who develops a manic episode out of the blue? It usually starts with being depressed. Almost always starts with being depressed, because in my experience, mania is just a flight from depression. It's an escape from depression, not like a choice. I'm going to choose. It's like, whoa, I'm leaving this depression. I'm going somewhere else. I'm going there fast. I'm going into, I'm not depressed. I'm happy. I'm not hopeless. I'm full of hope. In fact, I'm like God. I'm so full of hope. I'm not vulnerable. I'm invulnerable. I'm not hopelessly mired down. I'm making wildly but successful plans. If you look at what mania is when it occurs as you're dealing with a human being who slides into it, and in your practice you can see it in front of your eyes and you can help the person not go there, it's a shortcut. It's an unconscious, driven shortcut out of depression that the person takes. And you can always find that there were stressors and depressing events, and usually a feeling of depression, before the person just flies off in this other direction. And if you think, well, to yourself, oh, no, nobody could do that without a biological imbalance, then watch a football game. Because you'll see on one side of the stands, people are depressed as the game gets near to the end. And on the other side, people are in manic states. They're cheering. They're wildly enthusiastic. They're out of control. They're overdoing what they're doing. And they're cheering because they think they personally helped bring about this victory. After all, you know.
Reagan, that's the most brilliant depiction of bipolar I've ever heard. Go to a football game. There it is.
There it is. And then, let's suppose the winning team loses in the last 20 seconds. the people who have been manic and hyper and excited and out of their wits, intelligent human beings, are now leaving the stadium with every characteristic of a clinical depression. They're sad. They don't want to talk. They're stooped over. They even have the physical symptoms, you know. They're not walking in the same way anymore. And when I used to live in Washington, D.C., the town would get like that every time the Washington Redskins would lose, especially when they lost to the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I live 3 blocks from the Syracuse University's Carrier Dome, and yes. I see this every week. But one of the things that's shocking to me as I listen to you is that I have never in my life had a manic episode. Never, not once. And to me, hypomania, I used to describe it as a state in which no matter what happens, I'm not going to cry. I was depressed over and over and over again. And what I'm thinking now is that they called it bipolar rather than address the core cause of the depression.
Yes, they do that all the time. And they also, I think the main reason, in fact, I'm certain, the main reason we're diagnosing people bipolar comes right out of Harvard with people like Joseph Biederman, who went into a conspiracy with the drug companies. Biederman was the head of the child psychiatric pharmacology group at Harvard. They made a conspiracy where they took money from the drug companies to promote bipolar disorder to give new, stronger, more dangerous drugs. So, I mean, if you're depressed, there's a limited number of drugs the doc feels he can give you. But once the doc thinks you're bipolar, he can give you practically every single drug in the psychiatric armamentarium by his own self-justification. That's the reason, folks, we're getting these bipolar diagnoses in children, why we're getting them in adults. It's very straightforward. It's because the drug companies have bought the docs to create this way of giving multiple drugs to people at the same time. That's all that's going on. And it's a disaster to give antidepressants to people if they actually are that way. Anne? Yes?
There's no research that shows organic brain activity as the basis of bipolar?
No, none at all. Never has been, never will be, any more than there will be at the football game. There never will be. And ironically, when the real evidence is there for its being chemical caused by the drugs, they don't want to talk about it. No, it's just a PR campaign that began with Eli Lilly selling Prozac before it was even approved. They were selling the idea ahead of time by sending out docs to say that depressed people had biochemical imbalances. There's no evidence for it at all. And now what's happening, and my wife Ginger and I are really studying this, is they're going back and they're seeing there's a lot of brain damage now in the people who've been given these antipsychotic drugs and lithium and the other heavy-duty drugs long-term for bipolar disorder, the so-called schizophrenia, and they're getting atrophy, shrinkage of brain long term. And they're trying to say that's the bipolar disorder, that's, you know, the schizophrenia. There's even a study out now saying ADHD causes brain damage when it's obviously and unequivocally the drugs, no question whatsoever. And I don't want to scare folks, but this is the new reality that we have to face, that long term these drugs are causing harm. And stay on the line with me, and is our gentleman on from earlier, Dennis, is he still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Dennis, you've been listening to the show. You've been very good being quiet. I don't know if I could have done that.
All right.
You sent in a little note that you cured yourself of agoraphobia. I'll give you a little bit of time to tell us how you did that.
Well, this was about 30 years ago, and I went to a self-help group and this and that, and socialization of any kind is probably a good idea.
Agoraphobia is a fear of going outdoors and being with other folks out of your house, right?
Well, you have panic attacks that you feel like you're dying.
When you went out of the house?
Yeah, I mean, some people are housebound. It gets so bad that they can't bear to leave their house.
So you went out and you actually socialized with people.
Well, yes, I mean, but I still had panic attacks. Every now and then I would revert, I guess is the word, that you think you're having a heart attack. It is so scary and bad, you think you are dying. And that's why people don't even get to the point where they don't leave their house and they call the
So you helped yourself, Dennis, by going out and socializing.
No, well, I just went to them to get out and about and see if I could do it. But myself, I found that it's more or less existential problem in the sense that you don't exist in your own mind. You're always doing what the church says or the teacher says or that money says or your job says. In other words, you're always reacting to life.
So one of the things you did was to stop reacting to life and to begin to develop your own values to pursue?
Yes, yes. I mean, I pretended like I didn't think I existed in my mind, and then I had this runaway chemical thing that you get that you think you're dying, which can be cured. I went to a biochemist, and she suggested pregnenolone that you can buy at the health food store. It's a fraction of cholesterol.
Well, if the drug works, it's psychoactive, and it's not really the answer. Dennis, thank you for calling. I'm going to ask you to hang up because we need to open up a line. I really appreciate your call. I mean, what you went out and did was you courageously related to other human beings and you decided to build your own life on your own values and stop reacting to other people.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank you. Well, I'm enjoying this, and I'm just getting used to how it works. This is going very well. I'm very pleased, and I'm looking forward already to a month from now. Daniel in Missouri, your son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and you had a question.
Actually, sir, well, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I don't really have a question. I've been hearing, like, I'm part of, like, I liked your page on Facebook, and I saw that you were having the broadcast, and so I decided to listen in, and I hear a lot of people coming on and, you know, like, just questioning about coming off the medicines and such, and, you know, earlier in the year, I, you know, was going down the same road with my son. I mean, he was diagnosed, you know, first... he had no coping skills, then ADHD, then bipolar. I mean, it was just getting worse. And
but was he on medications starting
yes,
with
he
the
actually,
ADHD?
Yes, he was, I would say by the time we decided to take him completely off, he probably had between 8 to 10 medicines, and most of them were to counter reactions.
Yeah. How old was he at that point?
9.
Oh, my God. Well,
yes.
You do realize now that everything that was happening to him as he got worse was almost certainly the drugs, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Now,
how has he
been,
done since you've taken him off?
He has issues here and there, but I have to say, coming completely off the medicine was the best thing I could have done for my son. He, although, yes, he has issues, but... I mean, just about any child has issues. I think it came down to a matter of, you know, he was a little more on the hyper side. The teachers didn't want to, you know, it's like people these days are too quick to say, point fingers and say, oh, you know, this is wrong or that is wrong. And now my father was diagnosed as being bipolar when many, many years ago, this was way before, you know, bipolar became the, you know, a huge epidemic of, you know, trying to diagnose everyone under the sun. But the thing is I found that with taking my son off, it has helped him health-wise, but the biggest thing is for anyone that's trying to come off medicines, it's not... You can't just think, I think another caller had said that, you know, you can't think that coming off the medicine is going to be the magic solution. You have to go through, like, behavioral changes with you. I mean, you have to completely redo everything, your thinking on how you raise your child, whether it's your child, yourself. I mean... Obviously, there was issues why, you know, the child was acting out, and you need to get to the bottom, to the core source of what was creating your child or yourself to react.
What did you do to do that? Did you get help? Did you read books? Did you go to a parenting class?
Oh, I've been going. I just a lot of research on my own. We just try to we've switch the environment around, our house environment, just trying to make things easier, as you know don't sweat the small stuff, and you know the big stuff, try to eliminate it if you can. It, you know, if like my son, you know, if he would get upset, instead of trying to force, I mean, so many people have so many ideas on what works, what doesn't work, and the thing is not everything works for everyone. You have to find what works for yourself, for your child, and it's going to be a trial and error. We've gone through doctors, we've gone through like websites, just everything, but what it boils down to is more you need to do what you feel is right, and if it's not harming your child, you know, you need to go with it, or yourself. Resorting to, you know, self-medicating, whether it's marijuana and stuff, you know, I mean, luckily I've never had to deal with that. My son is, you know, still, I mean, he's only 11 now, but I'm hoping that, you know, that'll never come to be an issue. I mean, the biggest problem I have at this point is because of all the labels that were thrown. My biggest challenge is trying to teach him that, because he wants to quickly blame when something goes wrong, well, it's because I'm bipolar. No, it's not because you're bipolar, okay? That's an excuse. It's because you made a wrong choice. If he, you know, he knows right from wrong, and he's trying to take the easy way out. And I feel a lot of people, whether it's, you know, yeah, the doctors are trying to, you know, like you were saying, you know, with their in cahoots with the drug companies and such. But at the same time, I think people also, they don't want to take the time to do the work. They're too quick to just, you know, oh, yeah, there's something wrong with me. I'll accept it and give me that magic pill. And especially parents, you know, that do have difficult children. They, you know, it's too easy to just accept, oh, there's something wrong with my child, and that's why I'm not that perfect parent, or my child ain't that, you know, that perfect child that gets straight A's. And, I mean, it's just too easy for people nowadays. I mean, everything, you know, just like the computer, you know, the click of a button, well, it's almost the same with the drugs. It's, you know, as easy as picking up a phone and saying, you know, hey, I think I'm depressed, let me have some drugs and make me feel better. It's everyone puts the blame on everyone else, and then puts the solution on some magical, you know, substance, whether it's drugs or, you know, a getaway, whatever it might be, you know, shopping, whatever. And instead of putting the responsibility on themselves, and I think that's just the biggest part of the therapy of being able to treat yourself or treat, you know, family members, they need to learn personal responsibility. I think that's, you know, for anyone to fully recover and get better, no matter what their issue is, everyone needs to start with personal responsibility. If you don't have that, if you're not willing to deal with it, no one, no advice, nothing is going to help.
Danielle, marvelous call. Everything you're saying is just incredibly important for all the listeners, I really, really, from my heart, I really want to thank you for calling in. You've helped make this, along with Ann. Are you still on to say goodbye?
Yes, and what Danielle was saying is so right on, so clear, and so sensible. It's brilliant.
It was brilliant. Well, listen, folks, you were there. This was my first Open Mic Monday, and you've been here. And I made it through, and I learned how to do it. So I'm really looking forward to 1 month from now. Put it in your calendar. Tell your friends. And listen, go and look at the wonderful websites that my wife Ginger has created, including empathictherapy.org, and for news and information, hot news and hot information on problems in psychiatry and issues, toxicpsychiatry.com, and for more than anyone could ever want to know about me, Bregan.com. And come to our conference, meet us, meet dozens of other speakers, April 13th through 15th in the coming year. And listen, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Jewish Holidays. You know, start looking forward to making your life even better this coming year. You know, let's get running early toward that goal of having a marvelous new year where we're stronger, where we're more responsible, where we're more loving, and we find that as if a miracle, when we do all that, when we're stronger, when we're more responsible, when we're more loving, that our lives just get better and better. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bregan and his lifelong reform work on www.bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.